get work done this weekend. Psh, it's tournament time. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score, 89.7's weekly look at sports around Central Ohio. This week, we'll talk to a reporter covering the NCAA wrestling finals, where Ohio State has a handful of representatives, including one wrestler going for his fourth national title.
Then we'll head down the street to a hidden gem in Columbus, where a group of men and women come together nightly to play table tennis. And we'll talk to a longtime table tennis player in Columbus.
Table tennis, Thomas had some fun over there. I can't wait to hear that. But first, as we said, NCAA tournament time. Hope your bracket's not looking too bad today. Mine's not looking very well with those 14s winning on Thursday. Ohio State able to sneak by VCU.
Yeah, it's been a crazy tournament thus far. The first day had eight games that came within one possession. Five games were one-point games. One of the craziest days in NCAA tournament history, and like you said, a lot of crazy upsets. One upset that wasn't an upset in the eyes of Vegas, but was a seeded upset, was Ohio State was able to take care of VCU 75-72. Joining us now on the phone from the New York Times is Patrick Max. He covered Ohio State basketball all season, and he's in Columbus this weekend to cover the games at Nationwide Arena.
Patrick, good to have you back on the program. You were able to watch the Ohio State-Virginia Commonwealth game on Thursday. D'Angelo Russell was dominant to no one's surprise whatsoever. He really carried Ohio State. Was that your main takeaway? You think that was the biggest theme from Thursday's game?
Yeah, I think it was certainly that. Kind of like how Ohio State has all season, it's relied on D'Angelo Russell to essentially bail them out of a lot of dire situations. In a lot of ways, it was sort of emblematic of what Ohio State has been all season. When you really look at it, you know, Ohio State was the 10th seed, VCU was the 7th seed, but Ohio State's hardly an underdog here. They're a team in the Big Ten with more resources and a bigger surplus of talent to choose from. And I figured they would go in and, you know, not maybe win handedly against VCU, but I thought that they would have a pretty good shot of looking pretty good against a team that I wasn't really sure that was, you know, I don't think it was nearly as good as some of the teams even Ohio State beat or played competitively, like Michigan State or Purdue. To me, it looks like, you know, I think a lot of people in the fan base are enthralled that Ohio State won its NCAA tournament game, but at the same time, I think it's going to be a really, really hard go against Arizona when they play Saturday.
Kind of a breakout player who really saved the game for Ohio State is one that we haven't heard a ton about during the regular season, who hit two very big three-pointers in Kata Bates Diop. Talk about how his emergence in this tournament could give Ohio State an extra boost that they need to make a little mini run.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about Kata is I covered him actually, what was it, last February. Last year, I got to watch him play at the Hoopla tournament in Dayton. It's this high school tournament where all the best teams in the country kind of come for this this event every single year. And Kata was, at this point, he had committed to Ohio State already, but he was just sitting in the corner burying three-pointers. And I was like, wow, this kid's going to be really good. And, you know, he hasn't necessarily been a super productive player for Ohio State. And part of that's because he hasn't really found his way into the rotation. But he hit two major three-pointers, the one late in the fourth quarter and the one in overtime that really, I think, helped buoy Ohio State in a way that when Russell was not necessarily struggling, but when, you know, VCU had so many players guarding and beating up Russell that they needed somebody else to step up and make any sort of play to kind of, you know, give them some momentum. And at that point, I think those were two game changers. And for a guy like that who was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, and certainly I think can be a really, really he's a very gifted three-point shooter, and if Ohio State can figure out a way to kind of take his talents and use them to their advantage, I think that's going to be a new element for this team, especially considering how Mark Loving was supposed to be this, not world-beating three-point shooter, but somebody who was very effective. He had led the team, and he was suspended for three games, and really has been kind of non-productive ever since. And now that they're getting help from beyond the arc from a guy like Kata, and that was one game, I think the jury's still out on whether or not it's going to be a trend. But I think Ohio State fans are optimistic that maybe somebody could step up like Kata.
Some unexpected help there from beyond the arc. They also had some, at least as far as I'm concerned, some unexpected help in the paint from Amir Williams, a guy who has I don't want to be too harsh, but he's disappointed largely for his career. He was another highly talented guy coming in. He's a senior now. Can they get something out of him, something really productive, more than just the occasional blocked shot or rebound through this tournament? Do you think he's a guy that they can rely on?
I think they want him to be a guy they can rely on, but I think the evidence speaks for itself that he's been there for so many years and he has yet to put it together. I think in this day and age in college basketball, if you don't really put it together in your first or second year, that's kind of who you are. I think there was a chance for him to step up and be sort of a role player. Because it was clear, I think, after year two, maybe 2.5 years in the program, that he wasn't going to be this this talent that he was kind of built to be in high school. But even since then, he hasn't really stepped up into being, like I said, a role player for Ohio State. And, you know, he had an okay game, I think, against a smaller VCU team that I think wasn't necessarily going to challenge Ohio State underneath the rim. Against Arizona, it's a much bigger team, a much more aggressive team. We've seen Amir frankly get destroyed by bigger and better defenders. I think he brought a strong game when he played AJ Hammonds against Purdue in early March, or was it late February, when Ohio State had that win against the Boilermakers. And you never know, maybe Amir will kind of step up to the challenge against an Arizona team that's really going to, I think, have a decided advantage underneath, in the paint against the Buckeyes.
I've always, like Steve, I've always been skeptical about Amir's play. And in the first half, like the entire squad, the Buckeyes were struggling a little bit. We saw production out of D'Angelo Russell, and we expected that to happen. We said before the game, we've been saying for weeks, that if Ohio State was going to have a chance to do something in this tournament, it would be on the backs of D'Angelo Russell. He pulled through. But another guy that pulled through, I was really impressed with another senior in Shannon Scott and his ability to distribute the ball and really set up a lot of scoring chances. Talk about kind of the senior leadership on this team and Shannon Scott in particular.
Yeah, I think when you bring up the idea of senior leadership, it's interesting because this is a team that was supposed to be kind of spearheaded by its seniors but really hasn't been all season. Guys like Shannon Scott, Sam Thompson, Amir Williams, even Trey McDonald and Anthony Lee, the fifth-year transfer from Temple, were supposed to be guys who were supposed to really be kind of the backbone and I think the foundation of a team that had a lot of young talent coming in, and we've seen the opposite. We've seen D'Angelo Russell essentially carry the squad throughout the entire season. Shannon, I think, did a really nice job. I think Shannon's at his best, I think, when he is being a distributor and not a scorer. What's tricky for Ohio State is he tends to want to be a scorer a lot of the times. I think sometimes he feels like he needs to be able to put the ball in the basket, but I think it's very clear that Ohio State plays its best basketball when it gives the ball to Russell. He's clearly their best player, and he's their best chance to beat Arizona and continue to make noise in the tournament. And yesterday, I think you just saw Shannon Scott playing his role, and at the same time, when he plays his role, he's able to – it kind of gives him a certain level of ethos to, in my opinion, kind of step up and be a senior leader. I think Sam Thompson and Shannon have been, certainly, I don't get to see what's going on in the locker room and behind the scenes. From everything I've been able to tell, they're certainly good leaders. But there's a difference when you see those guys on the court making plays and doing a lot of things that you expect veteran players in a program to do. And veteran players who have been on the big stage before and say they want to get back to a Final Four despite some pretty obvious flaws the team has. There's a lot of confidence on Ohio State, and sometimes I wonder whether or not it's warranted. Which has always been kind of interesting to me because just when you look at the team's struggles, you would think this is not a Final Four team whatsoever. But guys like Shannon and the senior class have really kind of maintained that their goal remains to make it back to college basketball's biggest stage, which has always kind of been an intriguing notion to me.
Ohio State is going to be a heavy underdog on Saturday when they play Arizona, and rightfully so. Arizona, a 30-win team who dominated the Pac-12 this year. You've talked about some ways they might be able to beat Arizona. If you're Thad Mott, if you're drawing up the game plan, how do you try to beat Arizona? What's your strategy?
Give the ball to D'Angelo Russell. I really, honestly, I don't know because I think it's – and Ohio State's proven that it can play. It's hard because I really haven't gotten to see Arizona play a lot this year, really at all. I think just when you look at the matchups, in college basketball, such a game of matchups, Ohio State really does not pair well against the Wildcats. I think I mentioned this before, but Arizona's just bigger. I think Arizona's biggest strengths are Ohio State's biggest weaknesses, and it's I almost want to compare them to Wisconsin. I think they're two very different teams, but just in the sense that with, you know, Arizona has a lot of NBA caliber players, and Ohio State really doesn't have many, in my opinion, except maybe D'Angelo Russell, or not maybe, but definitely D'Angelo Russell. I think in this case, I think Ohio State, for its best chance to win, needs to, and this sounds cliche, but they need to buckle down on defense. Because when they do play good defense, and they've proven to be able to do that, that is, you know, that's kind of been a staple of the Thad Mata tenure at Ohio State, is this team can play defense and they can play. And when they do that, I think it tends to take the pressure off the offensive end. And I think that's going to be able to open D'Angelo Russell to kind of do some things on the other side of the court. And if they can give the ball to Russell and you see a guy like Shannon Scott become a distributor, I think they have a competitive chance. Ohio State's a good team. I think for whatever reason, they just aren't. They have, you know, it's not like they have garbage players on the team. They have competitive players. They just can't put it together for some reason. And I think part of that's because while they have good players, they don't really have any elite players, kind of like Arizona and a lot of these other top teams in college basketball have.
There's a lot of history between not only Ohio State and Arizona. They played each other in the 2013 NCAA tournament, but a lot of history between Thad Mata and Sean Miller, the head coach for Arizona, that dates back to the early 2000s. Talk about matchups between Thad and Sean Miller in the NCAA tournament and their history beyond that.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was the 2007 NCAA tournament. You know, that
yeah,
era.
Yeah, 2007.
Sean Miller is an understudy of Thad Mata at Xavier. I remember that 2000. I think I was a sophomore in high school, maybe a sophomore in high school, something like that. It feels like it was forever ago. And I remember watching, I think it was Ron Lewis bury that three-pointer at the buzzer to send the game into overtime. And
yep.
When Xavier had the game locked up, and I was pretty sure they were going to win it. And then we saw, again, another heartbreaker for Sean Miller when he was the coach of Arizona in 2013. I was actually covering that game for the Lantern, the school newspaper at Ohio State back then, and Quentin Ross hit that kind of awkwardly shot three-pointer from the corner. It wasn't from the corner, but I just remember it going in and just being like, wow. I mean, this is another Thad Mata Sean Miller matchup that ends on a buzzer beater, or essentially a buzzer beater, but where it's involved. These two, Sean Miller and Thad Mata, remain, I think, pretty close friends. It's interesting because, you know, you saw Thad go against Archie Miller last year, which is Sean Miller's little brother. It just seems like wherever he goes, he's facing one of his proteges. You know, the Thad Mata coaching tree has really expanded, and it's pretty interesting just to see how much it's grown. And when Thad's a really good coach, and I think when you're a really good coach, you're going to end up playing guys who would happen to be your friends and your former understudies.
The Ohio State men's basketball team takes on Arizona in the third round of the NCAA tournament on Saturday. Nationwide Arena also hosting tournament games. That's where Patrick Max from the New York Times is sitting right now. And Patrick, enjoy the games.
Yeah, thanks, Pat.
So the eyes of Ohio State basketball fans were on Portland, where Ohio State was able to beat VCU this week. The eyes of Ohio State wrestling fans in St. Louis.
That's right. The NCAA championships are this weekend for all 10 wrestling weight classes and the team tournament, where Ohio State is making a run and making a convincing run at a couple national championships.
That's right. And one wrestler in particular going for his fourth national title, that's Logan Stieber. Joining us now on the phone is Patrick Callista. He's in St. Louis covering the wrestling finals for the OSU student newspaper, The Lantern. Good to have you on the phone, Patrick. First of all, let's start with Logan Stieber going for his fourth national title. How was he able to become such a dominant wrestler?
Yeah, that's a question, you know, I've always asked him as well. And really, he just credits all the hard work and his coaches that he's had throughout the years. I mean, he's just constantly been wrestling his whole life. I don't know when the last time he wasn't a champion in some kind of sport. I mean, he won 4 state titles from Monroeville High School. Now he's won 3 national championships. I mean, even yesterday after he pinned his kid in the second round, instead of talking with the media right away, he's like, I got to go warm up and lose some weight because he felt a little heavy. So the drive just never stops with this kid. And, yeah, he's been pretty amazing.
Yeah, he's going for his fourth straight national championship. Is that kind of unprecedented in wrestling, or is if you have a dominant wrestler come in your freshman year, is that kind of how it goes? It's tough to unthrone the king.
Yeah, definitely. It's only happened three other times in history. And so, yeah, he'll become the fourth person ever to do that. So, yeah, it's not an easy class to get into. You know, wrestling tournaments, watching it this weekend is probably the hardest thing to get through. With so many guys, so many upsets, and, yeah, it's just tough to do.
So wrestling is an individual sport when you're on the mat anyway. It's a one-on-one event. But it's also a team event. They do some type of aggregate scoring. Tell us exactly how these national championships work on the individual level and the team level.
Okay, so yeah, Ohio State actually is currently in first right now. I think the end of the day yesterday was 23 team points. And what that is like Logan, for example, he wrestles his individual match. And for every win, you get a point for advancing. And then you can also earn bonus points for how you win. So you can get 1.5 if you made your decision, which is win the match by 8 or more points. And then you can tech fall someone by 15 points, and that gives you 1.5 points. And then if you pin your guy, then you get 2 points. So really how Ohio State is winning these matches is they got a pin from Tomasello at 125 pounds, a pin from Stever, they got a pin from Bo Jordan, and then also tech fall today from Tom Cello, and Kyle Snyder actually made your decision to his kid also.
So how many Ohio State athletes are competing in this national championship bracket that will ultimately decide the team championship?
Ohio State was actually able to bring all 10 of their wrestlers. You have to qualify throughout the season and hopefully get an automatic bid by placing in the top 8 to 10 range in your conference tournament. So Ohio State was fortunate to get enough. They actually had to get a wild card seed for the heavyweight to get in, but he had a good enough resume. The committee picked him to get here. So they got to bring all 10. Some schools only bring 8, 9 top schools. Some of them only bring 1. So it's tough for them to win the team tournament. But Ohio State definitely, with all 10 guys, definitely has a chance.
They definitely have a chance. OSU is obviously a good wrestling team this year. They've had some success in the past with guys like Tommy Rollins. Is OSU considered a national power when it comes to wrestling?
I think they're on their way. If you ask Tom Ryan that, he would say we're building towards. One of the big things, like you follow Penn State, Minnesota, and Iowa, of course. I mean, they're bringing 10,000, 13,000 people each match. And I think Ohio State was around 7,000 was their max this year. So, you know, he always constantly says, you know, building this program the right way. And, I mean, with when Logan got here and won as a national champion his freshman year, I think that really got the guys excited about the program. The fans around Columbus are really excited to, you know, watch this team now. And they, you know, for the first time in I think it was 54, 55 years or something like that, they, you know, co-champion for the Big Ten. And now they're in a spot right now in first here in St. Louis for their team's first ever national championship.
So tell us exactly, there are 10 weight classes in wrestling, so they hand out an individual national championship to each weight
right.
class, and then they hand out a team championship. So there's 11 national championships going to be rewarded in St. Louis this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. 125 to 285 pounds will all, they have to win 5 straight matches to be a national champion individually, and then all the points accumulate, including the guys who lose early on. They have to go through wrestle back and, you know, try to get all the way up to third place. So, yeah, the 11 championships total.
I knew that there are wrestling fans, obviously, around the country, but I was somewhat surprised to say that you said there were 20,000 people plus in each of the first morning sessions. Is college wrestling a pretty big industry? I mean, is there a lot of money involved? How would you characterize the college wrestling industry, if you will?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely on the rise still. But I mean, if you're in this community, you can really see the passion that really goes into it. I mean, it doesn't get all the love from ESPN, except for this weekend. They actually are broadcasting in some way or another on ESPN every single match of this tournament. So I mean, it's definitely on the rise. I mean, you tune into Saturday night, or actually tonight. And tomorrow, you'll see on ESPN's TV just how you know, exciting it is, and every match, it just has so much going on with the team race and everything. But it's definitely a sport that's on the rise, and, you know, fans just walk in here every single night.
The Ohio State wrestling team is in St. Louis competing for individual and the team titles. Patrick Calista covers OSU wrestling for the student newspaper, The Lantern. Patrick, thanks again.
Yeah, appreciate for having me, guys.
On the outside, it doesn't look like much. A normal storefront with big block letters on floor-to-ceiling windows. There's not a lot of advertisements or branding that's visible from the parking lot. There's nearly a dozen ping-pong tables visible through the window.
This is a table tennis club. It's a not-for-profit organization. Essentially run and by volunteers.
That's Al Fish, a volunteer at the Columbus Table Tennis Club, a club that he's been a member and volunteer of for nearly 50 years. Table tennis, which is commonly referred to as ping pong, is not a traditional sport in the United States. It's not football or baseball, golf, hockey, or basketball, but it's a sport nonetheless, and a lifetime sport at that.
Yeah, I consider it, you know, just about a lifetime sport. It's not real hard on the body, but you get some good exercise, and you can play, you know, for a long time. Though some people go out and maybe, you know, try to hit too hard right at first and mess up their shoulder or something, but if you do it reasonably, you very, very little chance of injury.
The Columbus Table Tennis Club opened as a nonprofit club in the late 60s. That's about the time that Al started coming. Before that, it was a for-profit venture in the old Olentangy Village Entertainment District in the 1940s.
I worked at a place that had a couple of tables, and I decided, you know, to go try it out. This was actually at Battelle. So I started playing, and there were, you know, sort of a regular group there, and I remember one time we were playing doubles, and my partner said, after I made a particularly bad shot, he said, Al, you ever think about taking up chess? But I stuck with it, and eventually I beat all those guys. One of the other guys that was there told me about this club. At that time, it was over on Cleveland Avenue in a kind of a seedy section, but, you know, a rented storefront. And there was a league going on, and he wanted someone to play in the league. And so I started with that, and been doing it pretty much continuously ever since.
The history of the Columbus Table Tennis Club spans almost 70 years, but its current location is a fairly new one for the club.
Well, we've only been here, University City, maybe 2.25 years, something like that.
Al said they have beginners at the club all the way up to expert-level table tennis players.
We have all levels here. People come in, and if they want a little coaching, we can give them some free coaching, and if they want, you know, extensive coaching, they can pay for coaching. And it only takes, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to show them the basics about what they should do, and then if they want to proceed, then they have to practice and repeat what we've, you know. It's all repetition. You have to be able to do it without thinking about it. Try to develop the right strokes. And it takes a while. And maybe some of us never do develop the right strokes, but we keep at it anyway.
The goal and the mission of the Table Tennis Club is fairly simple.
Well, the goal is just to provide a clean, family-oriented place to play table tennis. And I think we accomplished that pretty well.
With more than 100 members, there's plenty of opportunities to play ping pong. There's always someone there when they're open playing table tennis. There are plenty of rackets and balls as well for drop-in players. The Columbus Table Tennis Club hopes to continue to provide a timeless service for a timeless sport, like it's been doing since well before my time. And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. Tune in next week when we're deep into the heart of the NCAA tournament, and we'll explain just how bad our brackets are at that point.
And they will be bad, trust me. Until next week, you can find us on Twitter at After the Score, and you can also find an archive of episodes on iTunes and using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. One dance, one dance, one dance, one dance.